Thank you very much.
This is another copy of the same thing we have. Okay.
Well, we can begin our meeting. Should we call it to order? Citizen comments. Seeing none, I have no reports. Are there any committee reports? Approval of the minutes?
So moved. Second.
Discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Passes. Sheriff resolution number one here on the safety. Mark?
That's right here.
Good evening. This resolution is a request to modify expensive revenue budgets by $20,000 to account for a new grant award for traffic enforcement that the Sheriff's Department is participating in with Racine County Sheriff's Department. Rexor Patrol enforcement efforts focusing on alcohol and drug and impaired drivers. The funding is offered through the Wisconsin Department of Transportation, Bureau of Transportation, Safety. The funding period runs from October 2019 through September 2020. Kenosha County is partnering with Racine Sheriff, who's a grantee and administer of the BOTS Alcohol Impaired Drivers Enforcement Grant. The grant funds are used to reimburse the Deputy Sheriff's overtime and benefit costs for the ex-patrol scheduled. The resolution, budget modification, and grant award documents are attached in the packet. Kenosha County Sheriff's Department's share of the partnered award will be up to $20,000.
Discussion?
Second.
Discussion, Jeff?
So, $20,000 is coming from us to get that grant.
It's coming from Racine Sheriff to us.
Oh, okay. Okay. All right. Thank you.
Further discussion?
No.
Hi, John.
Is there any match we have to provide?
No, sir.
Just pure cash to us.
I love it.
Thank you.
All right. Anyone else? All right. Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? So this would require 2/3 vote at the board, correct?
Correct.
All right, next item is surplus funding.
That's correct, sir. This resolution recognizes surplus inmate phone revenue and unspent funds and other professional services expense budget totaling $118,170. This is to increase various expense budgets within the Sheriff's Department budget to cover anticipated costs through the end of the year.
Discussion, anyone? Yes, sir.
I remember doing one of these. Is it every year or is it every couple of years that you do this? Or?
We do it quite often. Our fiscal service manager is able to move dollars and cents around as it relates to where we have overages and unders, so we just balance it everything off. This one happened to be a contract that came through basically the third quarter of this year, third, fourth quarter-ish. Where we are going to be able to recognize some dollars and cents to balance everything else out.
Is this more money than usual?
That we've seen in the past for especially inmate phone revenue, correct.
Thank you.
Anyone else on the discussion?
Not a discussion. It's just there's a typo on there and then on the board. Somebody might bring that up.
And where is this?
Budgets within.
What page
the H and T are reversed there.
Mm-hmm.
Just in case it's brought up on the county board floor when the resolution is brought out.
Been around long enough, you just kind of do that anyway.
Yeah, right.
Did we have a motion?
No.
Was there a motion? I don't think there was a motion.
I thought there was.
No.
I'll make sure.
Second.
Further discussion? All right, seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? We'll circulate that.
Thank you.
All right, thank you. All right, next item is the audit presentation, Danny.
Good evening.
All right.
No, the audit report.
Shifts. Just in the other room still. Jeff Lambert.
Can you go to the audit report after this?
Maybe he'll.
No. The audit report is in the packet, but it's just after.
Oh, okay.
Okay, I wanted to start out today to just talk about what the audit entails, just to, for edification of what we go through a little bit and what the auditors go through. The auditors come in November. It's a preliminary audit procedures, and they test internal controls, they interview people, they pick certain departments that they rotate. So one year they'll go to the sheriff's, next year they'll go to circuit court, another year they'll go. So they're testing that we're, the way we say that things work, that they do. They do walkthroughs of transactions, they interview us, they look at our financial statements through probably around September, and just see how the county's doing. They'll read the minutes, see what events happened since they've been in last year. Then they come back, they do some planning from that. They see where areas of risk are. They assess if there's areas of risk in our revenue, expenses. So they're doing all that planning, and they come back in May. And then we have final statements for them to look at. So they do analysis, comparisons, ratios. They sample things. They also, because we're getting federal and state funds, they have to look at whether we're in compliance with all the different guidelines for all the different grants we get through the federal and the state. So they're testing even client folders. They're seeing that, you know, we're testing eligibility, or if there's income levels, whether our costs are allowable, if things have been signed off on, if they're within the program guidelines for what we can spend. So there's a lot to it. And in the meantime, our staff in all the different departments that they go to are responding to them, giving them documents, showing them our systems, and they even look at our IT controls too, just to see that we have those controls. We supply them with many work papers. So we do schedules for fixed assets, the debt schedules, accounts payable, we any accounts receivable that are outstanding. We also give them all our journal entries. They do a sample of that. So there's a lot of back and forth. They're here for a couple weeks during May, and you know, they spend a lot of time in the places where the federal money comes through. So human services, sheriff's department, that's where those grants are. So they're, besides just doing financial testing, they're also testing for compliance issues. And then they, in June, July, they're making their conclusions based on what we do is give, we put this report together here in the county, and we give that to the auditors, and they look at that and audit it. So these are our statements that they're auditing. And that's in the first opinion letter on page one, is where they say that these are, it's management's responsibility to put these financials together, and then it's the auditor's responsibility to give an opinion on it. And so they're doing all that work to be able to give an opinion that our financials are stated according to the generally accepted accounting principles and according to government auditing standards. And their opinion is that the statements are presented fairly in all material respects, and also the other schedules in here, they're also telling you that the management discussion and analysis section that we put together all are looked at, and the federal schedule at the end, they're all audited, and they're all clean. It's all a clean opinion. So that's good news for the county. We didn't have any problems there. The first section is called the management discussion and analysis. And if you go to page 10. This is the letter. She's still in the letter, yeah. You have to keep going down. Go down. You can see that it's out of it. There's a chart on page 10. We're just giving you a picture of what revenues are made, what kind of revenue is made up for the government type of activities. And keep going through. We'll have to come back to.
Did you accept it from the agenda?
Yeah.
Okay. You're.
So this one?
Oh, okay.
Page 10.
Facebook. Here we go.
Page 10.
I forgot to point out that our audit, the audit team that we have was called Schenck. They merged with the larger firm called Clifton Larson Allen. So the opinion page, you'll see their letterhead is Clifton Larson Allen, CLA. So it's the same team that we had, the same people, but they have a different name. There, this, just the bottom of that page. So this is the revenue pie chart that we usually, we put in there. You can just see how much, 40.9% taxes. And then we have grants, charges for service, and just shows you what makes up our revenues. And then the next page, that's the government type. And then this page here is the business type, which is Brookside Highway. Can you go down a little bit more? And that's the pie chart. So most of that is paid for by charges for service, as you can see.
Kathy, question here at page 10. And I don't have the prior years on, so I don't have any recollection. But I think the committee would be interested in knowing the comparison at page 10 between what you're showing in 2018 as property taxes, 40.9, and operating grants contribution, 39.1. How does that compare to last year?
Barn, I just went to get a copy of last year's audit.
All right, I mean, I think that tells a story. Maybe it's the same. I don't know. Maybe it's going up, maybe it's going down, but it gives you a picture here.
Okay.
Last year, property taxes figure was 42%.
Okay.
And I'm sorry, what was the other?
Operating grants and contributions.
That was 40% last year.
40%.
Yes.
So, well, we went down a little bit. 42% was taxes, now down to 40. Is that because we're dealing with a 41. Bigger number, or is there, where did the rest come from?
Barn, on page, you have the 17. Can you
yes.
go to page, page 26 or so? It's the statement of revenues expenditures. And look at the total taxes there.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Two.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's positive.
What is the total taxes on the
but interesting, the contribution.
Row, all the way to over
grants
to the.
Grants were down slightly.
80,627.
And then 18, it's 83 million. But those taxes are also the state, the sales taxes, and that's not just the property tax. In the number I'm just talking to you now.
So that's because the sales tax probably.
The sales tax went up. Yeah.
And what about why did the grants?
I have a chart on the federal and state grants. Can I show you that right now? And it shows historically because you liked. I did this because last year, Terry, you did ask these kind of things. So I put together a couple charts. I was going to show it at the end, but I can bring it up now. Can you bring up the first? This is the federal and state funds received. And you can see it's at 45 million in 2014, and it's very consistent. Went up a little bit in 17 and 18, but I think that shows that the county is able to capture the federal and state money consistently. This is all the departments, sheriff, human services, all the different grants that we get, and that shows that. And then the next chart I wanted to show, this here, I don't think people realize this, but the Medicaid that comes through the county is not on our books, but it comes into, we collect this Medicaid revenue, and it's gone from, in 2011, it's like 5 million. In 2018, we have this money flowing into our county to give services, and what it is that our people, the county people, and all the nonprofits that we subcontract with are submitting these people are eligible for Medicaid, and they're able to pay for services, so mental health and medical and things like that. So I think that it shows, I have a little note on the bottom, that for 2018, 10 million from via DADS, 4 million at Brookside, and then some from health and DCFS. So I think that's probably higher than any county you're going to see because we have a concerted effort here to get this money into the county versus having property tax pay for services. So I think this picture shows you a little bit of history on that.
The nonprofits are doing a good job.
The nonprofits are all working together with the county and making sure the records are up to the guidelines, and then that we submit the bills, and then the money can be come through. Do you have any other questions, Terry, right now?
No.
Thank you. Okay. On page 19 and 20 is a simpler chart of our fixed assets and our debt. And I think I see the audit as a reference, so if you want to look back at some point, but that shows a comparison of last year to this year for our assets. Last year for we had total of 192.76. This year we have 211. That's what the debt that we put for capital outlay, the roads, the buildings, everything that we're working on here is being recorded there, and it shows the product of that. And then the next page 20, if you could go on, it shows our debt. We started out at the beginning of the year, $124,355,000. We paid off debt. We have some new debt, and it's about $124,000, a little higher than, so we kind of a wash there. And at the bottom of the page is a historical, it shows that in 2011 we had $187 million, and now we're down to $168 million as far as our total debt, including our OPEB, vacation accrual, and our GO debt.
Long-term
obligation debt. There's a chart on the next page that kind of makes it more a little more dramatic as to where we've gone from 08 to. Okay, I'm not going to belabor a lot of the details, but I wanted to just point out the first two financial statements are where we make the county a for-profit entity, and we record, you can go to the next page. We record the fixed assets here. Those normally aren't recorded on the books. That includes roads and things. And then if you go down a little bit, we also have the long-term debt on the books, so it kind of helps compare from one government to the other. And then the next page is the income statement with as a for-profit. So we can, in other words, our proprietary funds are always on a for-profit basis. We convert the government funds so that we can be compared to other counties and things. And then the next financial statements are all regular governmental, the regular financial statements. On page 29, it shows the general fund budget to actual. That one. And you can see the original budget, our adjusted final budget, and then the comparison, we don't have any. Can you go down a little bit? The expenses are all within budget, and then this is the human services fund, similar, there's no expenses over budget there either. The proprietary funds are page 31. That's Brookside, Highway, and Golf Course. So if you wanted to see any of those in particular, their income statements on the next page. It shows how they did during the year. Of course, Brookside, we know, is in the with the new addition and things, and so there is, you can, it shows some, don't go in, yeah, right there. Can you go up a little bit? Yeah. That we know, we've reported that before, how Brookside is working on with the new addition. The next column is Highway, and then Golf. And you can see that the Highway and Golf are pretty much similar to prior years. Then after the financial statements are financial notes. On page, can you go to page 57? It shows our what we have invested our cash in. If you need to look, you can see it's all backed by government securities, so there's very safe. We have to do that by statute, of course, so you can see that we have it in different areas. And then page 63, 62, this here is a schedule of our government assets. And I was talking about, we have our infrastructure as a roads, and you can see the additions, the deletions, and we did some adjustments this year when we went live on our new system, but they were just between categories that we fixed that up. And the next page is our business assets, so highway, trucks and roads and bridges and things like that. On page 68, 69, you can look at our debt and the detail of that. There you go. There's the beginning balance increase, decrease, and I guess we kind of already talked about that. And then the last column is what we'll be due in the in 2019, what's coming due in 2019. So if you ever need to look up, there's a lot of detail in that section. After that is explanations of our pension plan and our post-employment benefits, our OPEB, so our health insurance benefits for people who have retired. There were some new guidelines put out this year. We also had to record, the employees have a life insurance policy at the state retirement system, so we had to add that on. That's a smaller amount and didn't affect the statements too much. Then after that, there's more detailed funds if you need to see any of the capital projects funds or the different housing authority, health department. That's all detailed in the back. And after that is our letters of compliance. If you go to page 115, we have the auditors looking at our, they report on our internal controls over financial reporting and on compliance. We had no findings there in that section. And then in the page 117, it's the report on compliance for each major federal and state program. And we had no findings in that area as well. We had no findings on the financial part of the audit. So this is an another year where with all the money coming through that the county deals with in all the different departments, we had no findings. So I think that's another year that we can, you know, be proud of the way we're working here in the county board and how they, every, you know, you over this oversight is part of the internal controls. And I think that's really important to point out that, you know, when the auditors come in, they see that the board is involved setting policies. And then the staff is able to, has the wherewithal to do all these transactions without coming up with any findings.
Not every county can say that you have zero findings year after year.
Yeah.
What do they do when they find a county that, and they have a lot of hoops to jump in, huh?
Then there's additional testing that's done the next year, and then you have to answer for how you improved.
Yeah, so that can you go back to that letter that in the beginning? The auditors do have a letter directly to the county board. It's called a management communication. And I think you got that in your packet. Mainly they're telling you that they had no disagreements with management. You know, they talk about their scope and estimates that were in the audit and things like that. It's pretty much a template report, but it's directed to the board. And then there was a couple charts in there. Last year, they pointed out that the Brookside billing process needed some work as far as the receivables that were outstanding. If you can see Can you pull it up just a little bit? The receivables were up higher in 2017, and the staff at Brookside was able to bring them down. There were some write-offs from older things, but they really got a plan in place to keep those receivables down. They're working constantly, reporting to the trustees, and I know I've talked with them, and they're analyzing things. They're looking at each account and keeping up to date on that, and I think they know that that's so important to the operations of Brookside to get that revenue in and not have to write off anything. So they're really working on that. And then the next picture, I think you're familiar with this, where we had the auditors point out that our delinquent taxes were fairly high compared to these other counties. And you can see in 2018 how much we've improved, where we brought it down from a high in 2016 down to now it's about 3.5 million. And we're still working on that. I know finance works with there's a cross section of people working on that, the county clerk, the county treasurer, planning development, corp council, finance, and IT meeting. I mean, I think we kind of got it to a great part where we have the technology in place, and everybody's communicating, and so that work together really, really helped, you know, improve our general fund and just improve to the citizens that it's important for them to pay their taxes. So there's a whole plan in place where they're not getting so far behind because we're affecting them with letters and things. So that was a big improvement too. So the auditors were nice enough to show those again in their letter to give us a compliment that, you know, we were working on it and they understand that. Just a couple other things is that next year there's some new guidelines that we'll be working on. And one of the major ones is that we have to report our leases differently. Right now it's just expensed if you have a lease, but it'll be going on the balance sheet. It'll be whether it's capital lease or operating lease. And so we already have a project going on that. Patty started with our account payable manager, and they're looking at all the leases in the county, and we have to record those on the books and get a good schedule together. And so there's a team working on that too. Have any questions?
Yes. I can add one thing. Going back to the first chart that Kathy pointed out to on page 10 that showed the property taxes being a 40% revenue mm-hmm. source and then 5% for the business type, which would include the Brookside and the Gulf operations. I'd have to say that in our budget for the overall, when you combine those two for the entire county, that property taxes make up 25-26% of the overall revenues. So I just want you to be able to walk away not thinking of the 40% having stuck. That was just for government activities. But overall, for the overall operations of the county, the percentage for what property tax goes for is about 25-26%.
And I think my pie chart includes the other kinds of taxes, sales taxes and things.
Right.
So it's not, I but think that's...
Which makes it
going back to what you said, other... What is that then if this isn't, you said 25% county operations, what
this
is that?
This is government activity, so that's not including Gulf, Brookside, all the other things, and that property taxes, if that category not included, as Kathy said, not only just property taxes, but other taxes were included there as well.
Sales tax brings that down as well.
So I just wanted you to, so you wanted to walk away, you don't think 40% in your head overall county, this 25-26%.
Sales taxes bring the change at all. If you
did. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Mr. Chairman, I move to receive and file the audit.
Okay. So, thank you. All right, further discussion? Questions?
When do we get the audit? When can we see the books?
You want a hard copy?
Is it on there? It's all on
it's
there?
It's in the packet.
Okay.
It's
that's
attached to the agenda when it gets published.
Yeah, I don't need it then.
Starting that's a couple of years ago, we began to give electronic yeah. copies to
okay.
the board. But if anyone would like a paper copy, we can provide that.
So,
just
yeah.
hit me up for it after.
So on the management comments here, so there's no recommendations, is that?
They just keep, they're recommending again, Brookside keep up the receivable monitoring, and then also the delinquent. That's just like a continuation. There's no new comment on it.
So when you say Brookside keep up the collections,
monitoring the accounts receivable, making sure that it stays down low like it is where we brought it, you know, that picture where.
But you're not saying that they're not, that they're allowing people to be delinquent?
No, no. Oh. They're working on it. That's why it came down, and they have a concerted effort that they're working every
they
month.
They have processes and procedures in place that they're following that are working very well.
Okay. All right. Anyone else? Yes.
Dan Candy didn't mention this, but this is my favorite page of the audit. It's the very last page, and it says that there were no findings and no corrective actions.
All right, good. Anything else, John?
Just like to congratulate Patty for a great audit on her first year there.
It's the entire team. Everyone
team
does
did a great
very
job.
Good job, and they all understand the internal controls and think like they need to think. So it's a very good team we have.
When's the last time we got a complaint? I can't remember.
Not since I've been involved.
And we never had.
Yeah, I don't know. Kathy,
it's been a while.
Yeah.
Not of any sort.
All right, further discussion? All right, seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Kathy, thank you.
Thank you.
All right, let's move on to the next item. The civil servants ordinance, is that you? Bye.
Cord here, I hope I don't unplug us. good evening.
Hi.
I had shared the document. Does anyone need a copy before I get started here?
Yes.
Okay.
Sure.
Got it.
I'll just pass them around if you want to take one. And so we have been working with the Civil Service Commission of late to address a couple of issues that have arisen as we recruit deputy candidates, and we've concluded that we would like a couple of changes to the civil service ordinance to accomplish some of our goals. Handed out my copy there. May I have that one?
Thank you.
All right. So in the document, I'll draw your attention first to 4-3. The changes are redlined. At the top of the page, number 2, this was just a cleanup item making reference to the Wisconsin Law Enforcement Training and Standards Board. There was a reference issued prior to February 1st, 1993. That's just out of date. It's no longer a reference that's needed in the ordinance. Looking further toward the bottom of the page, you'll see we're requesting a change under examinations. Second paragraph under D, chief examiner shall recommend to the commission the testing selection procedure to be used for the position of deputy sheriff. The commission shall act on the recommendation of the chief examiner. We'd like to add on changes to the procedure prior to the posting of any examination announcement. Currently, when we're ready to post for a application process, we have to have the commission meet and approve, even though there's no change to the procedure. So this would just allow us to do that as needed without them coming together and doing a vote in person. If we were going to make any change to, say, the rate of the passing score or anything like that, then it would require that vote by the commission. On the next page, 4-4, second to last paragraph under item number 3, this is speaking to the order of the administration of the steps for the process, and rather than having to follow this order as it's listed in the ordinance, we're looking for some flexibility, and I'll explain why. For example, when we go through a deputy candidate process, hiring process, we post for the opening, we schedule a test, they all have to come and sit for the exam, and then we work through various stages, ultimately leading up to offers for hire, and then those who are not certified have to go through the academy. The academy currently is only offered 3 times per year. So we have to time things carefully so that we can fill our seats at the academy and get our hires on when we need them. And occasionally, if we're working, for example, with the psychologist that does our job traits assessment, which is a step in our process, sometimes we might need to get appointments with him before we can schedule, for example, the medical examination, or before a PRT, physical readiness test, can be scheduled. So we just are looking for some flexibility to ensure that we can meet those timing deadlines for the process to get them through.
Mr. Chairman, yeah. So in the Judiciary and Law budget meeting, it came out that testing over the last 15 years has been very sporadic. You know, I mean, it wasn't set in stone of when they were done or anything. And that's not a negative, it just was based on need. So are we going to more, you know, 2-3 a year now? Or what are we, well, how is this evolving as far as, and how many vacancies do they have? And what do you see as the projection?
Sure. So in years past, we generally did a test every other year. And that eligibility list would stay good for the hiring needs, so generally for about a 2-year period. In the last 2 years, we've done 4 tests. We've had 16 separations in 2019 from the force. We currently have 5 vacancies, for example. We're seeing fewer people apply and fewer people showing up for the test. And the quality of candidates is generally a challenge. We're seeing more hires not making it through the training portion. So we're looking to address that with some terms under the contract that we reviewed at the Judiciary and Law meeting. But we also need to be a little more nimble in our process. Because we are testing more frequently, it seems, with increased vacancies and just the responses that we're getting when we are opening up a process.
What would be a reason for them not getting through the training? I mean, some of the reasons.
Sure. For example, not passing the academy. One unfortunately common reason is the physical readiness test.
Does that come at the end and they can't pass that, or what?
There is a final physical readiness test that is the most stringent of the physical readiness tests. And there have been candidates.
Do you lose some this year to
that? Yes. And then through the FTO process, there are 3 phases, correct? 4 phases. And occasionally we'll have a candidate that will not pass, just doesn't make it.
Well, the physical part at the end, though, it seems to be that you put them through all these things and they don't pass the physical. Isn't there some way along the line you can identify that?
Well, in fact, we're going to begin doing a physical fitness test as part of the examination, which our ordinance currently allows for up front,
yes,
to do a baseline physical fitness. And then they do have to do a physical readiness test as part of the process. And then they have to graduate the academy, they have to do the most stringent of the physical readiness tests.
So by that time, you got to figure it out, they're going to make it through that. Hopefully.
We would hope.
I think we're seeing this, we've fought this battle in joint services ever since I've been on the county board. So, I mean, there's such a training time and a different I mean, it's not like you go out and hire somebody. I mean, there's a whole process. And I think now from what I'm hearing, it's becoming more and more challenging. And I think like what we did in joint services is go back and review the whole thing to see how that's working. Have you guys done that? Or I think I'd like to have that after the budget on a finance meeting, just to have it explain to me what the process is.
Sure.
So I could kind of compare it to what we do in joint services and see, not to micromanage it, but, you know, just to hear how you guys are fighting that battle, because it is a concern. So thank you.
Anyone else?
Go
ahead.
Then on page 4-7, we've added number 6, which indicates that any candidate who's been decertified from an eligibility list and failed to progress in the recruitment process at any point may not sit again for the examination until 1 year has passed from the date of their previous examination. What we're seeing now that we've done 2 tests in 2018 and 2019, we're having candidates who have failed come and sit for the exam again, which, yes, shows determination and initiative, but it's a cost. And we'd like to, you know, see them take some time to improve and develop themselves before us spending the money again on them sitting.
They came back before a year, they pass failed again.
We're seeing them cycle through, yes.
Passing or failing, excuse me. Passing or failing the second time?
Failing.
Okay.
Yes, in some cases. Generally, we're talking about candidates who actually passed the exam but are failing through the rest of the process. And then under number 9, this references the residency requirement. So law enforcement, our law enforcement are to have residency within 15 miles of the county line. And as it stands currently, they have to have that residency established at hire. So we're looking to give them 9 months to establish that residency. So for example, a candidate who's going through the process who may be applying at other agencies, when they're successful, they will get generally 2 weeks notification that they are to report that they're being hired. And 2 weeks is a very short period of time to establish residency. So thankfully our candidates have done it so far, but we had a couple of close calls. Other agencies do allow for even up to a year. We think 9 months is reasonable. That's it.
All right, discussion. Is there a second?
Second.
Further discussion? I'm seeing none. All those in favor say
aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Thank you. All right, the next item is report on county wages. Is you're going to do that today?
Claire and I are actually both going to do it. If you want to stay there, Claire, I'll stay over here.
Don't leave.
You all should have received the write-up that we did. I emailed it to all of you and we attached it to the agenda. And if we put a copy at your place as well, if anyone would like a copy, let me know. I have a few extras. At the last finance meeting, we were asked to give the committee an update on where wages are in the county, where they were. So we did this basically history through the present. We went back to 2010, that was about 10 years. In 2010, all Kenosha County employees received a 2% general across the board increase. At that time, union schedules were still in place, step schedules, so some people were working through the steps, but the 2% was on top of that. In 2011, there was no general across-the-board increase. Represented employees received steps if they were in the steps and hadn't reached the top of the scale. Non-represented employees didn't receive any increases that year. In 2012 and 13, there was no across the board. In that year, representative employees who were still in the staff schedules got their steps, and non-representative employees received an increase to the schedule that we had in place for them at that time. On June 30th of 2014, all Kenosha County employees received a quarter an hour raise, in addition, again, to any step increases or salary increases they were eligible for. And then in 2015 is when we began the classification and compensation study. Many of you were on the board at that time. You remember this study that was done. Siegel Waters was contracted to do the work. Employees put together a list of the jobs, the duties that they performed, that was reviewed by their managers and by the manager's manager, and then it was reviewed by HR, and it was sent out to Siegel Waters. Those became the basis for new job descriptions, which were assigned titles, duties, not duties, but job titles, and then those jobs were placed in a new salary schedule, which is what we have in place right now. That was brought to the board in 2015. I believe there was a committee of the whole, and the dates are in here, but I think it was May that the committee of the whole was held, and then the board voted on adopting the classification and compensation study in June of 2015. It was implemented in three phases. Phase one included many of the jobs that are listed on page two. Those positions were placed within the wage scale, and employees, at that time, there were 93 employees that were above the top of the range in which their job was placed. So those employees are called red circled employees. They received a $500 stipend at that time.
One time.
And in that year, any of the jobs that were not part of phase one continued on their step schedule, and anyone at the top received 1.5%. I did not have that in the write-up. I found that later. Phase two was correctional officers, direct supervision officers, and admission and release specialists. So that was adopted by the board in June of 2016, implemented in July of 2016, and then the last phase were RNs, LPNs, CNAs. The positions are listed there. The phase three recommendations were brought forward with the budget and put in place January 1st of 2017. So by 2017, all positions had been studied, placed, and put into their new positions. Then each year, HR, after that, HR would send out positions for study. They were hearing from managers that it was difficult to hire into a position, or that there were different issues. They would send jobs out to be studied to determine if they were still in the correct pay grade, and how we were compared to the market. So there have been reclassifications that were recommended with the 18 budget and with the 19 budget. And some of those positions are listed here as well. And now coming into 20, during 19, I'm going to turn this over to Clara at this point because she's the one who was involved in the steps for 19.
All right, before you go there, where does the merit increase
that is part of here? That's the way that the salary schedule is designed. There's a minimum, a midpoint, and a maximum. And employees are somewhere in there. They could be at the top, they could be somewhere in the middle. Every year on their anniversary, they're given an evaluation, and if they are
successful,
they receive 3% of the midpoint of that range, until such time that they reach the top of their wage scale. Reaching the top of the scale doesn't promote them to another pay grade, it stops them there, because that's what their job is qualified for.
So when was that implemented?
That was implemented in 2015. That pay schedule was part of the whole Siegel Waters thing that was adopted by the board in June of 2015.
Yeah, it was the first time there was a merit.
Yes. Yep. At the end of 2019, we project the number of red circle positions to be 221. So I'll turn
it over. All right. So this year, our compensation study included 103 job titles that covered over 440 employees. Our findings there indicated that we were below market We had 48 positions that were studied that were below market, and 32 of those positions warranted reclassification to higher pay grades, which we have proposed in the 2020 budget. Our overall market position was determined to be below 95%. Remember, our target is between 95 and 105%. Working with Siegel Waters, we're recommending a 2% market adjustment to get us back into market range. And so with the combination of reclassification of some of those positions and then that 2%, it should get us back in there.
So does that mean you're moving up the scale and you're getting 2% and another 2%?
So the existing wage schedule, which includes all of our pay grades, we're looking to increase that schedule by 2%. So
everyone gets 2%.
Well, the schedule. Okay, all of the minimums, midpoints, and maximums would go up by 2%. That's the schedule. So that means if we hire someone new, a new minimum pay rate is going to be 2% higher than it was in 2019. Okay.
If you're working here, then you're going to go up 2% and then another 2%.
Well, with that 2% of the wage schedule, if your current minimum, so if you're at the minimum pay range in your grade, then you would see a bump up to get to the new minimum, okay? But that would only be for those in the minimum.
Is that 2% or is that greater than 2%?
It would be 2% because the schedule's being increased by 2%.
So employees that have been here for less than a year because they started at the minimum of the current schedule and have not gotten any raises because they've not hit an anniversary.
I thought it was 3%.
That's the merit increase. And we're talking about those, if we change the schedule and someone's below that point because they started this year and they started at the lower point, we're raising that, we need to move them up to the bottom of that. They'll still be looking at the potential 3% of the midpoint on their anniversary, but they may get a bump up to minimum. Like I said, that only affects those employees that have been here for less than a year, because anyone else who has been here for more than a year has received potentially a 3% of midpoint on their anniversary.
So 3% is really what it is.
So
as you move through the thing,
your pay grade.
It's pay grade. If you get an acceptable evaluation, you go up 3%.
You get a 3% increase.
3%.
Yes.
So to answer Terry's question straight up, it's if you're getting the 3%, you're also getting the 2% on top of it.
On your anniversary.
Yeah. Yeah, so they're proposing 2% to everybody this year. Plus, the people who are not redlined are getting 3% anyway.
Right.
So, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, just to make it clear.
Okay. Were you finished?
Yeah, I.
Oh, okay,
yeah.
Very good. All right, questions or discussion? Yes.
Yeah, I mean, I think this budget is so tight. I mean, we asked the administration to come in at 2.5, and we're at 2.9, and I understand why, but I don't know that we can give the 2% on top of the 3%. I understand the red circled employees, you know, because they're not getting anything, but I don't know. I mean, that's something I'm really going to have to think about, because I'm not, I mean, with the sheriff's deputies' contracts and with the budget where it is, and the state asking us to pay more, and the feds asking us to pay more, I mean, this budget is really, it's a hard one, so.
What is new construction this year? What is it, what are we projecting? 1.8. 1.8. So it's actually 1% if you take out the
So is the 2% on top of the 3%, or is the 2% on top of the old wage?
So on an employee's anniversary, they would get 2% of their current rate, and then if they have a successful evaluation, they would get 3% of the midpoint.
Is 1.8, isn't that kind of conservative too, at 1.8?
I was expecting it to be higher.
I think
it's going to catch up as development comes on. It's going to.
On the gateway, but I think we projected more than that.
Yeah, I was disappointed when I saw the number actually.
Yeah.
You just said the 2% goes in effect when they have their annual review?
Yes.
So it does, because at the budget hearing we had Monday, it was mentioned that it was starting, somebody said it was starting the 1st of January.
The wage schedule, you know, the 2% to the wage schedule is applied at the beginning of the year. But that 2% market adjustment for employees will be applied on their anniversary.
So that's a total of 5%.
If they're in the middle.
If
they're in their grade, right.
But then you have to figure out a lot of our employees are in the middle someplace.
But that
3% is when you're down here is a lot less than 3%.
Isn't it 3% of the midpoint? So it's like 3% no matter where you are in the grade. So.
If you're over midpoint, it's actually a little less.
He's paying attention.
Mm-hmm.
When you say 2%, what is that including? All the costs that's broke down on the budget thing? Is that including the FICA? Is that including all the other items in the 2%? Or are they going to get 2% of their, whatever their wage was, 2% of that wage, and then all the other wages, all the other costs go in there?
They get 2% of their rate. And I mean, yes, we of course have to pay
every budget that
taxes
I
on that. But
I took all the salaries of the budgets and I took 2% and added on to it, and that's up 2% from 2018.
I don't have a problem.
2019
to 2004. That's what I did. I mean, Matt just corrected something. The 2% is 2% of the commitment as well. It's not 2% of the wage.
Nobody's getting less than 2%.
No.
It's 2% on the midpoint.
So 3% on the midpoint, 2% on the midpoint.
So with your health insurance plan, it's not costs, you don't have to go into the details of that, but will their increased costs there equal the wage increase anticipated?
We're projecting that the increased costs will be less than the wage increase.
We're not going to give them 2% and take it away on the health insurance.
That's what he's asking.
That's exactly what I'm asking.
I know what you're asking.
And I didn't hear what the answer was.
She said yes.
Yes.
No, I said we expect the cost to be less than the 2% that we would get.
The cost for insurance?
Yes.
That yeah, okay. Right.
Their contribution. I'm talking about their contribution.
Yeah.
The
premium.
Maybe the committee doesn't know what new plan is going to be, but is that going to their new costs anticipated? I understand, you know, a lot has to do with
you
go to the doctor, the hospital,
etc.
But do those two in general,
exactly,
and they just equal out so somebody's even? And if not, what is it? 1%? Is it 3%?
There's no percentage of that. So
I mean, if we're talking about probably you'll get 5% increase, what's the increase in this health insurance cost over here?
The answer, without getting into too much detail in terms of the health insurance plan, which will be presented on the 22nd, is that for most employees, they will experience an increase in pay.
How
out.
Would that be?
Yeah, how much? What percentage? That's what I'm asking.
Depending on when they fall in that process you have, and they can get lower rates if they go through the whole health.
Right. Care. There's wellness that's factored in, and it's for, you know, if it's depending on if someone's enrolled in health, dental, and vision. So there's a lot of different variables there.
Yeah, but it must be an average.
For the most part, it will be very minor increase for employees who are enrolled in health, dental, and vision to their premium. So they will see the significant portion netted out of their salary increase.
Yes.
So by budget time, are we going to have a percentage then at that particular time on the 22nd? To know, you know, when you say minimum of what? I don't know what that is.
Well,
because that's where I'm confused right now, because I understand Terry's question fully, and I know you do as well. And, you know, like you said, it take from one to take, pay the other, then there's no increase.
I asked Barna for the details on that today, and I'm sure when he sends it to me, he's going to send it to all the rest of you.
No voice of reason. Thanks.
I do know what the details of it are, but I'll leave you to discuss that. I'll leave you to reveal that, but I think that is still the issue that I would like to know. Are you even or are you not even? And there must be an answer to that.
Well, if you're even, they're not getting a raise.
So,
it's
I mean, we can't say on one hand that we're going to give employees a raise because we can't compete with the private sector, and then by the same token, we're going to take stuff away from them even though we give them a raise. That's what makes
the thing you got to remember, too, is 20% of our employees are red circle. So they're not going to get the 3% plus the 2%. So you need to know what that is. If you're going to answer that question, how are you know, one-fifth of our employees going to handle that? I mean, that's going to, I'm sure that would come out as a question.
I think what we have, if I can, I think what we have to know is, what would it cost to leave the health insurance alone? A number. In other words,
leave it same as it is in 2019?
Right, same as it is right now. I'd like to see that number.
We'll look into that.
That's the night of
the
presentation.
Yeah.
So, what I can tell you
is. We're going to do the budget at the end of the month.
Employees who are enrolled in our wellness
tiers
at silver or higher and enrolled in health, dental, and vision will net out almost the entire wage increase.
They will get, okay.
Yes, because the premium will be nearly the same, and in some cases a little bit less.
And I know that they can take these tests and what the procedures, health, exercising, or whatever. Why don't they all do it? Is there physical barriers for some of them, or what?
Well, there are various standards, but some people
just don't want to do it.
Choose not to.
Do it.
You know, I'd like to have this answered at the meeting because it's not, you answered in terms of premium, and I asked in terms of cost.
Right.
And that's the real question. Not premium, but it's total cost.
You mean based on usage of the plan?
Yeah. I mean, that's the real issue.
24, right?
You're saying, well, your premium's going to maybe up $2. Well, it seems nothing. But it's the plan. That's your show. But I don't want to. I want to know that answer that night, because that's the real question here: your total cost versus your total wage increase. Or as Ron asked you, that's an unfair question too. Keeping it the same.
What would the cost be?
Yeah. I'm not expressing an opinion of support or opposition, but I want to know what the facts are. Okay. Further questions or thoughts? I mean, there. Would you mind having on this?
Well, I guess everybody won't agree with the information you got, but that's the facts.
Right. Yes, John.
Barna, do you have any idea when you might be able to send us those numbers?
Next week, I think.
Okay. Earlier rather than later? Or?
I can get next week the chart that you had requested, as far as the other calculations that we're talking about here, we'll have to figure out. Right. It'll be either next week or it'll be presented at the budget hearing.
Thank you.
22nd.
I mean, there must be an average cost for an average employee in terms of what utilization, how much money is in.
You're basing on the experience of previous year.
Yeah. What does the average employee spend on doctors, hospitals, dentists, etc.? I have no idea.
We took several away a couple years
ago. I bet there's numbers on it.
There is numbers on it. There has to be numbers on it. There's a cost to it, there's a number to it.
Barna, if you wait to get numbers like that, say when you present it in the budget, I would like to have those a little.
Try to get earlier.
Yeah, because you know we're gonna sit here and just be hammering this out for hours if we wait till that time to get those numbers. Especially if we leave insurance the same and all of a sudden the budget goes up to 3.2 or something. I mean, it don't work. I'm having heart palpitations thinking
about
that,
so. Right.
No,
I'm just saying.
Well, I mean, if you leave it the same, then you have to, and you want to keep the percentage, overall percentage the same, you got to cut someplace else. I mean, that's the simple answer. Otherwise, you just keep piling on and piling on.
The more I read, the harder that is to find.
No. All right, further discussion.
Well, Ab's here.
I don't want to have to go to work tonight. I don't really have to. Stay calm, will you? Everything will be okay.
All right, further discussion? All right, well, thank you, and we look forward to hearing from you.
All right.
I'm sure you look forward to coming back.
Thanks, Clint.
There
he
is.
All right, so the films are somewhat being circulated, or they have not even started, so Jeff, maybe
the bills.
Jeff, why don't you pass along to Ron there? The reports are listed here. Is there any other report, human resources?
That was it, yeah.
Okay. All right, general fund, Martin.
I have a general fund report. Everyone, I put a general fund report on everyone's. Does anyone else need a copy of the general fund report? Anyone? All right. So this is the sheet that I
get that.
So if you look at the boxes at the bottom there, it shows that from September to October, overall, we're not showing very much difference as far as what we expect in the increase in the general fund. Just a $25,000 increase. Just to point out, there are a few items that went up and down. I'll point those out. So the items that went up, our sales tax revenue surplus went up from 790 to 885. Miscellaneous category went from 500 to 705,000. Federal inmate housing revenue went up 100,000. But in total, overall sheriff's department surplus went down from 505 to 385. Human services overall surplus went from 150 to 250. Decreased side, our health insurance deficit popped up a little, 100,000, and liability insurance, 50,000. So, but overall, like I said, we're 5,000, and our percentage of general fund expense is 28.7%.
Anything else?
No.
Discussion on this?
So we're down to 28.69.
Yeah.
Which is down. Well, it was actually up 400. But that's below what it was.
Down slightly.
It's down slightly because
last year,
every year the general fund expenses go up 2 to 4%.
Down about 100%.
So we're probably comparable to where we were last year.
All right, further discussion on that issue? Are there a number of the other reports? Are there any others to be given?
The only item I would mention is this was not attached to the agenda, so it wasn't in your board packet, but each of you had one.
And you got a couple of schedules for hearing dates and everything.
Mm-hmm.
The final budget hearing dates are Tuesday, November 5th, and budget adoption is Wednesday, November 6th.
The original schedule had those were Wednesday and Thursday, but there are no elections this year on Tuesday, so we moved them to Tuesday and Wednesday. As Chairman Esposito noted at the meeting last week.
see our delinquent, I got this delinquent tax thing in front of me, I see
yeah.
I see they're going down little by little.
Yeah, I didn't have time to compare us to this time last year, yeah. So I'll try to have that together the next time.
They were actually pretty good, actually. I think like the 2014 is only 48.
Yeah.
And so it's 16. Still got some that's tax deedable, but I bet she's got that collection plan going.
Yeah, it's working well.
Okay, it looks good. Really.
We'll do it, Jerry. Is there any other discussion on any of the agenda items here that we've overlooked? Not be sure to review the bills before we leave. Looks like that's been done. There's a motion to adjourn.
Second.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Thank you for coming.
You can go back to the other
if you need a schedule for the hearings, we have extras here.
Yeah. Yep.
And there are no changes.
And the salary increase is coming.
I don't know the answer.